introduction. I think this is one of the most nerve-wracking readings in Ireland, not only because I'm in Cork City, which is a city that has given me many things, including my beloved Leo, yeah. And a whole, and a whole tribe of not in-laws but outlaws. There's a few representatives at the back of the room. I know that I'm in a room full of poets with your sharp ears listening for all the little wobbles and chinks in the poems. So, but I am very, very grateful to Paul Casey for inviting me, because I respect so much what he does, and he keeps an open door. In every generation there are the poetry wars, and it's really important to keep the door open to everybody of every stripe, gender, transgender, undergender, all 17 genders, and keep the doors open for all of us. So I'm very, very honoured to be here tonight. Thank you, Paul, for the invite. Rosie mentioned the poem Geomantic, the long poem, which is composed of 81 short poems. So I'm mostly going to read from that tonight. But to start, I'm going to read a poem because Mary O'Connell here behind me mentioned it and said she loves it. So that's a good enough reason to get going.
Thank you.
And it's a poem called The Solace of Artemis. And I know all of you know who Artemis is, the great Greek goddess of the Eastern Aegean. And in her name is the Greek word for bear. And some people say Artemis means the sanctuary of the bears. And she's associated with bears even before classical times. In 2011, there was research published at Trinity College, Oxford University, and Penn State University. Research that was done from scholars from those three, scientists, I suppose, from those three universities. And they discovered, they sampled bones of bears from 27 sites around Ireland, mostly cave sites for obvious reasons, because that's where the bears did like to hang out. And they discovered that every single polar bear alive today has the mitochondrial, that's the mother line DNA, from one Irish brown mother bear. Now, I suppose there wasn't really a place called Ireland back then at the retreat of the ice 20,000 years ago. But why not claim it as an Irish success story? Okay. So this is The Solace of Artemis. I read that every polar bear alive has mitochondrial DNA from a common mother, an Irish brown bear who once roved out across the last ice age, and I am comforted. It has been a long, hot morning with the children of the machine, their talk of memory, of buying it cheap. But I, memory keeper by trade, scan time coded in the golden hive mind of eternity. I burn my books, I burn my whole archive, a blaze that sears, synapses flaring, cell to cell, where memory sleeps in the wax hexagonals of my doomed and melting comb. I see him loping towards me across the vast ice field to where I wait in the cave mouth, dreaming my cubs about the den, my honeyed ones, smelling of snow and sweet oblivion. So I'm going to go on and read from this book, Geomantic. And as you can see from the cover, it does have behind it an idea of a patchwork quilt. And though all of the poems are the same length, they're all quite small, longer than a haiku, shorter than a sonnet. You have to get in and out of the poem very fast. They each have 9 lines. So it was a kind of demented patterning adventure for me to make this book. And I made it over the course of the years 2013 to 2016, which were the start of the decade of commemorations. So, you know, we were commemorating 1913 and our radical roots of the Republic. We were celebrating or commemorating or commiserating about the 1916, the Easter Rising. But the memorial acts that most influenced me and inspired me, not just in those years, but for a long time now, have been the memorial quilts that communities make for their lost children, lost through the ravages of poverty, including addiction. So they are inspiring to me, and the communities who make them are inspiring to me. So this book really came out of my engagement with those people. So I'm just going to read through them. I'm not going to, you know, they were made to be read in any order as you flick open a book. Well, you know, there's no given order to them. Sometimes there's runs, but I'm just going to read them and read through and see how we go, okay? I better check the time now, so I don't go on and on and on and on and on. So, it starts, this was launched on November the 14th last year, the exact time that the moon, the supermoon, would be closest to the Earth. The biggest moon since 1928, and the biggest moon that will ever be that close to the Earth. The closest the moon will be to the Earth until something like 2034. So I think that the fact of the moon's closeness does count for a lot of the lunacy we're experiencing on both sides of the Atlantic at the moment.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. So the moons. Moons like petals adrift on the stream. Night moon and day moon, moon in eclipse. Slender new moon in the winter sky, and full harvest moon, a golden ball. Moon of my first breath, my mother's death. Grandfather moon, my father's frail boat. Moon of my lost child, my sister's fall. Moon of my beloved's waking dream. Moons of my life, adrift on the stream. You don't know. They're not too short. It's only for really long-winded, long-tailed poems really deserve claps, I think. These are all very short. So, the trust. Leave her in the lap of Our Lady, her counsel for where to place the lost when we close the door on their madness. She slammed the door on her own daughter, left her to the city's chartered streets, found her in the Liffey's dark water, cast up in the week before Christmas, the city gripped in the hardest frost, the eve of the new austerity. The clouds. Some mornings the room is full of clouds. Clouds where the students' heads ought be, little weather systems of their own. They put all their work up on the cloud, dream and song and secret and story. Consciousness seeds the digital zone with cold fronts, sunny spells, cirrus clouds. Every weather of the room I grieve, the cloud children of the new machines. The memory stick. I searched high, low, all over the place, growing more frantic by the minute. A whole summer's work in a square inch cohesion of metal and plastic. An ode, an elegy, a ballad, a sonnet flawed by its rhetoric but still retrievable at a pinch. If I could recall where I put it, the memory stick in its shiny case. The pinhead. Just how many angels were dancing last night in your junk, dazed eyes? And how in God's name can you be such a drag on this miraculous entrancing creation? You swear you can change now with your life in a black plastic bag. We dread the sight of you, advancing feathers flying, thunder on your brow, frightening the children and the dog. The hide. This morning, the whitewash on the line, like prayer flags filling, then spilling the wind onto the shadows below. How thin, how vulnerable the skin at wrist, temple, soul, throat, groin. The tongue licks a secret path to the earlobe and whispers to the creature within the darkening words of an old song, while childhood ghosts buffet the window. The old neighborhood. I was dreaming of Gardner Street again, Georgian inner cityscape, how they named it when they laid it out, somewhat like a natal horoscope, squares that trine and sextile country seats. As if summoned on some psychic Skype, the ghosts of my childhood manifest, my feral girls, my angels who skipped summer into being with each beat. The understanding. I heard the kids in the back garden, their grandfather's last day in the house, his good blue suitcase parked in the hall. Dad told Mr. Burke he's a goner. He's definitely not coming back home. Ma said he might if he gets better. He'd get lots of injections and all. Yeah, right. It's like the place they sent Rex. It's where they put the old people down. The last thing. The last thing my ebbing father said to me was, not the wind, before he slipped below the horizon of his morphine dream. So, was it the moon in the hospice rigging, or the cloud's buoyant shadow, or my mother's voice helming him home? No. I think it was some ferocious winged creature at the ward's window, breast feathers flecked with salt-laced foam. Promise. This one is based on a sculpture by Cecily Brennan. It's two wrist guards, and on one is scribed into highly polished stainless steel, which is what the wrist guards are made of, I won't do it. And in the other, not today anyway. fantastic. Her work is all about the traumatized body. So it's called The Promise. I won't do it, not today. I won't do it anyway, not today, no. Not because I can't do it, I won't. Fallow fields lie dreaming under snow. They won't be ploughed, not this spring, they won't. On the fence post, a grey hooded crow is part of some mystery I won't fathom now. Though I'm really quite low, I won't do it, not today, I won't. How are we doing? Okay, the melter. this reference is a very famous Dublin literary pub, The Melter. I remember you well in Grogan's. You called it the poet's horror hole. And though it was easy to get there, it was harder to find a way home. Now that you're on the straight and narrow, with your charts, your mottos, your slogans, your strategies, your game plans, your goals, you're melting our heads with disasters, with gossip, with lost bar god syndrome. So the broken bow. The broken bough. We held our breath when you were a boy out on a limb of the old oak tree, helpless below as you shimmied up into its shadowy canopy. That day the bough broke and you clung there alone through the sudden thunderstorm. We came upon you after, unafraid though drenched to the bone. The pattern set, all those times since, we wasted our breath. The web. I spun those nights to Van Morrison on Fitzroy Avenue, in a dream part Victoriana, part nightmare. Elsewhere, at my web's frayed selvage, you were dying, less yourself each day in a white cancer ward in Dublin. I scanned your memory for this meme. That time you talked me down, pulled me clear of my fevered visions, my blank page. And nearly there. The ghost song. This for might interest the visitors from across the Atlantic. It's spun out of a line from a poem of the great American poet, one of the greatest poets of the century. We celebrated her centenary last year. She was born in 1917. Maybe a more profound thing than the Russian Revolution, the way things work out. Gwendolyn Brooks.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is the ghost song, and it's spun on a line of hers. There were a lot of poets spinning on lines of hers last year to celebrate the marvelous fact of her birth and her fabulous opus. And the line is from this fantastic poem of hers called The Mothers, that she wrote to console the women of the ghetto who were being preached against for having abortions by their preachers. And the line I spun out was, the singers and workers that never handled the air. So the ghost song. From a dream of summer of absinthe, I woke to winter. Carol singers decked the halls of some long lost homeland. Late night shoppers and drowsy workers headed for the train. So the night that you died was two-faced. June light, never far from mind, though snow fell. I handled grief like molten sunshine, learned to breathe your high, lithe ghost song from thinnest air. And visiting, I know they're not all Californians, but they're funneled through California, and this was written to honor my teacher, who is the great American poet now in his 87th year, Gary Snyder, and it's called The Inscription. Honor the dust, wrote Gary Snyder in my old copy of No Nature. Before Bella, our beloved dog, got her teeth into it. Now, dog-eared, oft-thumbed, much annotated, it sits on a bockety shelf right beside the well-made box wherein lies her wag, her bark, her growl, her lick, her rapture of devotion, her dust we honor. And the last of these I read is called The Flood, and I'm reading it especially here in Cork, risking being hung, drawn and quartered, because I know you do have your occasional run-in with unruly water. So The Flood. It was only when it receded we knew it for the gift it had been. If truth be told, we missed the water. It was exactly what we'd needed. We missed the way it made a mirror, doubled goose, godwit, egret, heron, and that once, in moonlight, we looked down on two complete and drowning strangers, those depths where later Wolfbane seeded. So that's geomantic. So, and just to finish off, I thought I'd, the last thing I've worked on, or nearly the last thing, I finished it earlier last year, is a sequence of poems for the Dublin Tenement Museum, which is in the process of opening and should have its final big opening in the spring. And it was absolutely a fantastic thing to be asked to do, because I actually grew up in the old tenements in Dublin, and to be asked to contribute poetry to the Museum of Tenement Life was just such a trip. But I didn't know where to start, and I know the City Fathers, because the Dublin City Council were footing the bill and had asked me. I know they kind of wanted Dublin in the rare old times stuff, you know, I got that subtle hint. And when I told them that I'd written a sequence of poems in honour of the muses, there were kind of a few swallows. The muses, like, what have they got to do with tenement life? But in fact, the old tenements had all the iconography of the muses, because they were built by the Georgians, Luke Gardner, in fact. And I grew up on the corner of Gardner Street and Shamrock Street, and a lot of my childhood was spent in these magnificent rooms, full of lyres and all the iconography of classical Greece and Rome. So I thought I would feminize the space, as we say in some quarters, by bringing these female energies into the poem. So I wrote a poem for each of the nine muses, and so I'll just give you one of them to finish up.
Two.
And one anyway of these, maybe a couple of other from other, so anyway.
Yeah.
My director is over here. Anyway, the nine muses, so I had a great time with that. So I'm going to give you the muse. Polyhymnia is the muse of sacred poetry. And when I was a child, tenements were tenement houses were divided into two kinds of houses, right? There were open door houses and closed door houses. And in the open door houses, quite often when you came down in the morning under the stairway and in nooks and crannies, you would find what today would probably be called rough sleepers, was people who had nowhere else to go. And many of them were the old relics of what I call imperial trauma, you know, old guys who'd fought in the First World War. They were still around when I was a child, often dislocated, or what we called as children, spunkers. And these were old women, or to our eyes as children, old women, they might have been that old. And they were the cast off prostitutes of the Monto area, which was where our family came out of. So I wanted to honour those women and the people in the tenements who minded them and looked after them, because I would be sent out with tea or a cut of toast, or, you know, people would within their limited means, be quite kind. And certainly if you were caught uttering a bad word against any of these misfortunates, you'd be in serious trouble as a child. So this is anyway to Polyhymnia, muse of sacred poetry, and it's Our Lady of the Apocalypse. So, Our Lady of the Apocalypse, who never closed your heart to the dissolute, pray for us who gave shelter in broken down Georgian tenements, who kept the doors open to the demented ones, those who came in rags and miasmas of foul odour, in delirium tremens, the worn out old spunkers, the displaced relics of imperial trauma. O sweet daughter of memory, veiled in enigma, who brought longed for oblivion to the Mets drinkers, the Dipsos, the Alcos, the put down no hopers, those who came in from chaos, from cold, from winds, from rains, to sleep it all off in hallways, in stairwells, who rent the long night with sobs, who cried out to you in the throes of their last agony, grant them eternal succor. Finish with a very short poem, which actually is concerns my grandmother. She would have been born, and I found her in the 1911 census at the age of 6 on Lower Tyrone Street in the heart of the Monto in Dublin. And she definitely was, I'd say, a central influence in how I was, how I grew up, how I valued myself. And she was that common mixture of inner city Dublin women. She was very pious, and I spent a lot of my childhood on my knees before the beautiful icons of Our Lady. But she was virulently anti-clerical. And I heard her voice in my ear the November that the Ferns report into, the Rhine report into child sexual abuse was published. I just heard her glorious, beautiful Dublin voice in my ear. So this is called Hannah Grandmother. And without her, I would not be writing poetry today. I know that. I know that absolutely for a fact. So, coldest day yet of November, her voice close in my ear. Tell them priests nothing. Was I 12, 13, filthy minded? Keep your sins to yourself. Don't be giving them a thrill, dirty elf feckers. As close as she came to the birds and the bees on her knees in front of the Madonna, Our Lady of the Facts of Life, beside the confessional, oak door closing like a coffin lid, neatly carpentered, waxed and buffed, in the well-made box of this poem, her voice dies. She closes her eyes and lowers her brow to her joined hands, prays hard, woman to woman. So thank you for your attention.